Good afternoon. I'd like to call House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 6th, 2024. The time is 1:19 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grunberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. I ask that you please silence your cell phones. Staff assisting us today is Talia with the Juneau LIO and Sophia with House Records. The following members present is Representative Groh and Representative Sumner and myself, Chair Vance. We have two items on today's calendar, and that is to consider the governor's appointees and then to hear House Bill 227, Electric Utility Liability, by Representative Rauscher. First item on today's agenda, we will hear from the governor's appointment for the State Commission on Human Rights. I'd like to let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Carpenter at 1:20. So we will now hear from appointee Mr. William Craig. Mr. Craig, if you would please place your name on the record and introduce yourself and speak to your experience and desire to continue serving on the Human Rights Commission.
Well, my name is William Craig. I live in Sitka. I'm going to serve another 5 years as a commissioner. I've served 5 years already and chaired 1 year. It's been a good experience. It was a rebuilding period for the commission, though. A bit rough at the beginning. And I've served the blind and deaf community for about the last 30 years and disabled community also, advocating for legislative reform at state and federal levels. I'm also still currently active as a National Federation of Board blind affiliate for Alaska. Yeah, I'm trying to keep this short because my phone may cut out. I'm having bad cell phone service today. Sorry. Are there any questions that I can answer?
Do we have any questions from committee members? Seeing no questions at this time, Mr. Craig, could you just talk to us for a few minutes on some of the things that you are passionate about in the Human Rights Commission?
I'm passionate about issues for the blind community in particular, and the deaf community in particular. I'm legally blind. My wife is deaf. She hears some with a hearing aid. So those are two particular issues I'm passionate about. I'd like to see some reform in Alaska on educational standards for blind children. There's what's called the Bright Act that passed in Missouri last year. And I hope maybe next legislative session that can get passed here in Alaska. It says standards on teaching blind children, starting with Braille and going through all the rest of the curriculum. For the deaf community, for people that are deaf adults, life can be very difficult. ADA compliance is low in the state of Alaska in that area. My wife is facing going into a pioneer's home or something similar, and there's no sign interpretive services there. There's very little Braille in the building to a blind person. Those are the types of things I'm particularly passionate about. Any other questions?
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the chair. I'm looking at the application, I believe, for Mr. Craig. And in several of the locations, it says see resume, but I don't see a resume attached to the document. So maybe this is just a procedural question. But do we has the committee been provided a resume that's referenced on the application here?
Representative Carpenter, our apologies. Mr. Craig was having a hard time getting his resume uploaded from his end. He's having some connectivity issues.
Okay.
I do have an older resume from my initial application for Human Rights Commission. It should be in the state's computer systems. It hasn't changed any except for 5 years of service as an Alaska State Commissioner.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
We have a question from Representative Groh.
More of a comment, Madam Chair. Somehow a resume was in my packet. Your staff member was very interested, so he ran off to photocopy it. He asked me how it arrived, and I said, there it was.
Thank you, Representative Groh. Mr. Craig, I just wanted to thank you. I know that you and your wife have been here in the Capitol before, visiting us on different issues that are important to you in the commission, and I just want to thank you for your service, and we are distributing the resume that was shared so that members can maybe see a little bit of your experience and see if there might be any more questions. I'd like to let the record reflect we've been joined by Vice Chair Allard at 1:25 p.m. Are there any further questions from the committee members? Seeing no other questions, thank you, Mr. Craig, for being available online, and thank you for your service on the Human Rights Commission.
You're welcome. It's been an honor to serve.
I will now open public testimony on Mr. Craig's appointment. Is there anyone in the room who would like to provide testimony on Mr. Craig's appointment to the Human Rights Commission? Seeing none, I will turn online, and I do not see anyone online who would like to provide testimony, so I'm now going to close testimony on Mr. Craig's appointment. In accordance with AS39.05.080, the House Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the following appointee, State Commission for Human Rights, William Craig. A signature on this report does not reflect an intent of any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any further sessions. So I will now take a brief at ease to sign the report and transition to the next agenda item. Back on record, we will now hear House Bill 227, Electric Utility Liability, by Representative Rauscher in its first hearing. I'd like to welcome them to Representative Rauscher and his staff to the table. You could both place your names on the record and begin walking the committee through your bill.
Madam Chair, my name is George Rauscher, District 29. I'd like to thank the committee and yourself for hearing this bill and for waiting for me to get out of the last committee. So an act relating to liability and an electric utility for contact between vegetation and utilities facilities. House Bill 227 protects Alaska's electric utilities and their ratepayers from paying for damage caused by vegetation that falls from outside an electric utility's legal right-of-way and contacts a utility electrical facility. If HB 227 becomes law, electric utilities would not be liable for the damage caused by vegetation outside of their easements contacting electric facilities. For vegetation inside an easement, electric utilities could still face liability under existing negligence standards in cases where the location of vegetation or the cause of the damage is disputed. A court would have to determine whether the protection provided by this bill applies. The bill does not prevent electric utilities from being sued. It provides a court with clear direction on when liability does or does not apply in a situation where vegetation contacts power lines or other electric infrastructure. HB 227 accomplishes this by bullet number one, making clear in statute that electric utilities may not be held liable for cost, property damage, death, or personal injury resulting from contact between vegetation and the utility's facilities if the vegetation is located or originated outside the boundaries of the utility's real property, lease, permit, easement, or right-of-way. And the second bullet I'd like to say is that HB 227 also makes clear that a utility is not liable for cutting, girding, or otherwise injuring or removing vegetation in part of the trunk of the vegetation, it's just inside the boundaries of the utility, real property, lease, permit, easement, or right-of-way. Importantly, the bill does not preclude civil liability if the utility itself causes vegetation to contact the utility's facilities. Alaska Electric Utilities diligently maintain their right-of-ways to prevent damage to power lines and other infrastructure. Those electric utilities should not be held liable for damage caused by vegetation outside of their legal control. By passing HB 227, the legislature will help protect Alaska utilities and their ratepayers from potential increases in rates due to a situation that is outside the control of an electric utility. I am going to, at this moment, turn over the comments to my chief of staff, Ryan McKee, to go through a second and other comments. Thank you.
For the record, Ryan McKee, staff to Representative George Rauscher. So the sectional, section one amends AS 09.65 by adding a new section, ensures a utility offering services to the public may not be held liable for property damage, death, or personal injury if vegetation outside the utility's right-of-way falls onto a utility's facilities, unless the utility caused the vegetation to fall. It also allows a utility to remove vegetation if the trunk straddles the right-of-way. And then Section 2 amends the uncodified law of the state of Alaska, and this section outlines that the Act will apply to civil lawsuits against electric utilities filed on or after the effective date. And then we also have a couple people online if the committee has any specific questions.
Before we continue with that, could you repeat? I heard you say, if you could repeat the sentence about where the trunk of a tree straddles a line.
Yeah, it allows the utility to remove vegetation if the trunk straddles the right-of-way, so they would still be able to cut that down so it wouldn't risk damaging the facility structures or anything that's inside their area.
Thank you for that clarification. Vice Chair Allard.
So I just have a few kind questions. A little bit of my concern is, well, I guess I can go from here just a little bit of digging through the chair. Could you, how far are we looking at vegetation from being away from anything that the utilities is required to clear?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, it's my understanding that there are several different widths of the which you're talking about on both sides of the utility line, whether you've given them permission for 10 feet, or most of the time it's 15 for a section line, near a section line, and then there's high power lines, which are even farther yet, and those are mainly going through state land, federal land, and such. So there are different answers to your question.
May I follow up? Thank you. So kind of depending on where these utility structures are located, does it depend throughout the state where that line is? And the reason I'm going down this line is because of Maui, right? So we know how the fire started. Mm-hmm. A utility line collapsed. They had a lot of vegetation around, and it just set the whole city on fire, and people lost their lives. So in a situation like that, are we saying that we're going to protect the utility company, or are we going to make whole the individuals who lost their lives and their homes?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, to Representative Allard. First off, I want to say that I don't know all the facts on Hawaii. Okay, I just want to make that perfectly clear first off. But if what you say, a utility line within the right-of-way started the fire, then I assume there would be a liability for the utility company there, and this bill does not stop anything from that being the question. But I am getting handed a piece of paper at this moment, number four, And it says it's important to note that this bill does not absolve utilities from all liability if utility causes vegetation to contact their facilities. It can still be held liable. This provision ensures that utilities are accountable for their own actions and encourages them to take necessary precautions to prevent such incidents.
Yeah. Follow up.
Your chief of staff writes very quickly. That was a long message, and thank you for the clarification.
I pay him.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm seeing we have quite a few questions from committee members, which I love. We do have three invited testimony that may answer some questions. So if you could hold your questions, and then because I think many of the invited testifiers may be able to answer some questions, so we will keep them online for members as well. So Mr. McGee, do you have a preference of who is first in line for invited testimony? Okay, first we will go to Ms. Carrie Ann Baker from Homer Electric Association. If you could please state your name for the record and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you. Representative Vance, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Please continue.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today and inviting us to testify on this important issue. And we would like to thank Representative Rauscher and his staff for the hard work that they've put in on this particular bill. A couple of things just to note about this bill. It's very narrowly tailored to codify what is understood to be existing law related to property damage, and negligence. So in a scenario like this, for example, HEA will clear all of its rights of ways once every 7 years. We have 3,166 square mile service area in Kenai Peninsula. Of that, there's 2,532 total miles of energized line. Most of our rights of way are about 20 feet, 10 on each side. There are some differences depending on where you are, and I don't think we need to go through that. But one thing to really note and understand is we protect our lines and we clear it because we want to provide reliable service. What this bill is dealing with is if somebody doesn't maintain their property and it then damages by blowing into our lines, we're not held liable for something that we can't control. We don't have the right to go onto private property. We're very careful about even going on to private property to clear our lines. We know people want their property to be private, and they want us to be responsible when we go out there. So some of the things that we do is we send letters ahead of time letting people know that we're going to be there, what it's going to look like, and how we're going to handle it. We also will look at any time if somebody wants to report what we're calling a hazard tree and invite us to go inspect it, we'll go on and we'll take a look at it. And if it is endangering or could endanger our line, we will take it down. Now, we won't remove it because obviously that's a cost that we would then have to pass on to our members. But if it's going to endanger the line, we will take it down. This is a huge issue because of the spruce bark beetle that has been happening. So I thought I would just give you some numbers that I think this committee and others considering this may not fully appreciate. I didn't until I pulled the numbers this week. So in 2020, HEA had 629 unplanned outages. Of that, 16% were caused by trees from outside the right-of-way. So that's not too bad. In 2021, that number jumped to 24%. In 2022, that number jumped to 47%. In 2023, that number jumped to 48%. From this year alone, from January 1 to today, we've had 77 outages caused by trees falling onto our line from outside of the right-of-way. That's a 48% of all of our outages just through today. So the numbers are increasing. And, you know, for us, we really want to be good stewards of our lines. The idea that something like Hawaii could happen is absolutely horrifying to us. We want to provide reliable service, and we want to take care of our property. And in that scenario, I really appreciate Representative Allard bringing up that question because I think it's an important one. HEA has the duty to maintain its property, to do so in a responsible manner. And if HEA is negligent in maintaining its property and it causes damages, HEA would be liable for those damages in a scenario like that. What this bill does is provide a very narrowly codified exemption for private property that then causes damages to a utility. So we appreciate the narrowness of it, and talking about the tree that straddles the easement line is very helpful to us, because when you're in the field and you're trying to take down a tree, having just a little bit of ability to really just do that one that's right on the line is helpful. So we appreciate that amendment. And I'll just reserve the rest of my time for questions unless somebody has something specific.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. We do have questions, and I'd like to note that we also have Andy Lehman, the general counsel for Alaska Power Association, available for questions. Heather O'Clary, for the statewide real estate right-of-way chief with the Department of Transportation, also available for questions. Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, so it occurs to me that the base of the tree could be entirely on the private property, but if the tree is leaning the trunk, or the upper part of the trunk could be on the utility easement, would that be the case, that a tree that's entirely, say, rooted on private property could then be taken down? Or, and maybe that should be the intent, since it would then be leaning into the utility easement. But I just wanted to clarify that point.
Representative Rauscher, what is your intent with this legislation for the question from Representative Sumner?
Representative Rauscher, to the chair, through the chair to Representative Sumner. I am going to defer to apparently the utility for now. And if the question can't be, help online, but I'm going to, that answer can't be answered today. We will find out for you, but I'd like to know what the people online have to say.
Through the chair, Representative Vance, Carrie Ann Baker, if I may.
Please continue, Ms. Baker.
Thank you. How HEA would deal with a scenario like that, where there is a tree that is outside the right-of-way and we would not have the ability to go onto private property to remove it, if we looked and we saw that it was there, all likelihood our contractors would be talking to the property owner. We also have a hazard tree program in place. What a hazard tree program does is you can actually call, you can report a hazard tree, and we put this in our letter when we send it out once a year for right-of-way clearing, but this program is not limited to just where we are for right-of-way clearing. If somebody calls and reports a danger or a hazard tree similar to that, we'll go out, we'll inspect it, and we will actually take it down if we are given the permission to do so. So that's how I presume most utilities in the state of Alaska are dealing with that in that same manner. In fact, I would be surprised to hear otherwise, but I won't speak for them.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. I'd like to let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Johnson at 1:46 p.m. Representative Sumner has follow-up.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. That does sound like best practice, but my reading of the bill would be that if any part of the trunk is in the easement, they can just simply cut it down. I think maybe that is the intent, but I just want to clarify that. So, thank you.
Representative Sumner, I too am reading on page 1, line 11, that if the vegetation is located or originated outside the boundaries, that there's an exemption. So if the trunk of the tree is outside the boundary but has a limb leaning inside, mm-hmm. Representative Sumner.
That is correct as far as the liability goes, Madam Chair. But then if you look at Section B, lines 13 and 14, they have a separate exemption, I suppose, from liability for, triple stumpage damages or whatever for going in and cutting down trees that are not entirely within their easement, or maybe not at all rooted within their easement, but some part of the trunk. So we are putting that into statute. I just want to make sure we're clear on what that means. So, thank you.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. through the chair, How many times have Alaska utility companies been held liable for vegetation on private property that has fallen on or blown into the utilities? And I guess I understand that it's going up, the problem with the spruce bark beetles and you know, a lot more power outages. But I'm curious about, without this legislation in place, I want to quantify how big of a problem is this? How many times are they being held liable for this particular situation?
Representative Gray, we have Andy Lehman from the Alaska Power Association. Is that who this question is directed to?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Lehman, are you? Did you hear the question from Representative Gray?
Yeah, for the record, Andy Lehman, thank you, Madam Chair. I did hear the question, and I'm ready to answer it.
Please continue.
Thank you. So I don't believe that there has been an Alaska electric utility that has been held liable because these cases, as you can imagine, like a lot of cases, don't end up going to trial, right? There's, I don't believe there's ever been one that's gone to the Alaska Supreme Court. They end up getting settled, right? And, but there have been lawsuits brought against, Alaska utilities. I'm familiar with, at least two that I know of, and all of them are either ongoing or concluded in settlements. So it has happened here. And it certainly happened in Lower 48 as well.
Follow up through the chair to Mr. Lehman. Speaking of the Lower 48, can you tell us how many states have implemented this policy?
Andy, for the record, Andy Lehman through the chair. There are other states that have looked at this issue. I don't believe that any other state has passed a bill that looks exactly like this one. I do think Alaska has uniquely challenging service conditions because we have vast and sparsely populated service areas. We also are unique in that, almost all of our electric utilities are community owned, right? They're either co-ops that are owned by their members or municipal, utilities. So, you don't have, anywhere near as widespread community ownership as you do in Alaska. So no, I can't tell you that there's a bunch of other states that have done this. This is an opportunity for Alaska to be a leader in this area.
Follow up. When this bill was heard in a previous legislature as House Bill 29, there were suggestions about reducing the risk by moving all of the power lines underground. So I'm just curious about how feasible that is, and at least for new power lines. And it may be a question for...
Through the chair, this is Andy Lehman again. This might be a question that Carrie Ann Baker would be better positioned to answer, but I can tell you from my own experience working with electric utilities for 25 years now, constructing underground lines is dramatically more expensive than overhead. Whether you're talking about new lines or moving old lines underground. And again, with the vast distances that we build power lines with very few customers to use them, it really isn't a practical solution, especially in rural, more rural areas where you're going to have more issues with potentially with vegetation and power lines.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last follow-up. In that previous legislature doing House Bill 29, they also discussed a possible amendment that would provide immunity for utilities to trespass near the right-of-way in order to cut down vegetation that, as Representative Sumner was talking about, where it was entirely rooted outside the right-of-way but clearly was a risk. Is that an option to just make an amendment to allow an immunity for trespass for the utility to get rid of that tree that's, it looks like Representative Allard has supported that question. So I don't know if that's an option. It sounds like the vice chair is opposed. So question for anyone.
Mr. Lehman, please continue.
Thank you. This is Andy Lehman. I think that would be pretty problematic. As I think Ms. Baker testified, utilities have challenges when they already have the legal right to be within their easement, clearing vegetation. It does. People love their trees in Alaska, right? They do get upset when they need to be removed or trimmed for safety purposes. Going on to their property where we don't have an easement, I think could be a real issue. I'm no expert on takings, but I would be concerned about something that said we can go and just take a tree off of somebody's property where we don't have an easement. I just think utilities would be very, very concerned that you would have a lot of very, very angry members if that were the rule.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a last comment. People do love their trees, but people love their lives and their homes as well. Thank you.
Mr. Lehman, I want to continue with the train of thought of talking about the settlements, litigation, and you mentioned that there were settlements. What's some of the cost of these liabilities and settlements, and are these costs transferred to the ratepayers?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, I think maybe that's probably a question for me operationally, if I might.
Ms. Baker, could you please state your name for the record?
Yes, ma'am. Carrie Ann Baker, Homer Electric Association. I suspect Andy may talk about the costs of some of the settlements. A lot of that is not something that would be declared. One of the things that Homer Electric has run into, the reason we have the hazard tree and we ask for permission to go onto private property and remove it is because we don't want our not only is it a liability to us if this blows into our line, but it's a reliability issue. We want the power to remain on. One of the things, and I'll just share a really big mistake that Homer Electric made, we had somebody call and report a hazard tree, and we went over and we were like, sure enough, it is a hazard tree, walked out there, took it down, and then another person walked out and said, what are you doing to my tree? And we thought we had gotten permission to be on the property to remove the tree, but it turns out it was the neighbor who requested it and gave us permission. So that's a scenario right there where we've got process now where we look and we make sure we clarify because, you know, we took down somebody's private property without doing due diligence. That's a scenario where we had to enter into an agreement to settle that one. We do talk about it publicly because we think it's important. But every cost that we incur, whether it's for buried lines, whether it's for taking down trees or any other cost, that gets passed on to our members. And one of the things that does concern us with some of the things that have come forward is this idea that we would go out and maintain other private property lockstep. If that's what this committee or the state wants to do, we really hope you'll consider budgeting for something like that because every one of you guys will be paying for it. And the property owner is in the best position to know how their property is being maintained. A duty to inspect private property to determine what is and isn't be well kept, that could be really challenging and it will be costly and all of that would be pushed onto the members. And so that's why you'll see so many utilities through best practice get permission, roll out programs where you can report because we want to go there, but we also think that the property owner is in the best position of maintaining their property and probably should be doing so so that those costs are not passed on to other members, some of who are not able to afford those kind of things. So those are the problems with some of the suggestions that have been brought up, respectfully.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. We have Representative Groh and then Representative Carpenter.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask about a factual scenario and then about a couple of additional policy proposals or possibilities or options. And I don't know for sure, Madam Chair, you know, who the best person to answer these questions are. My first one has to deal with factual scenarios. There seems to be a lot of sort of thinking or imagining, at least from my standpoint, of that the sort of the prototypical or most classic situation this legislation tends to deal with is an 80-foot tree falls over and hits a line and causes, you know, within the easement or right of way of the utility and causes a fire. And the 80-foot tree, tall tree, is located on land that you know, adjacent to the utilities corridor, right of way, or easement. I want to ask about another factual possibility or scenario. Do these issues sometimes arise when a wire from that it's, you know, clearly supposed to be within the utilities corridor, right away, or easement, breaks and then goes off and contacts vegetation outside such easement slash corridor slash right away and causes a fire then? Has that come up or first of all, as a factual matter, has it come up? And as a legal matter, how is it handled either now under current law or as proposed to be dealt with under this legislation?
Representative Rauscher.
I'll just defer right now to those who would know better.
Mr. Lehman or Ms. Baker, which one of you want to take a stab at this one?
Madam Chair, this is Andy Lehman. I'll take a stab.
Please continue.
All right. So I think Andy Lehman, APA General Counsel. So the issue of like could a wire break, right? Could the utilities facilities contact vegetation, right? As opposed to vegetation coming and contacting the utilities facilities. I mean, I do think that is possible, and utilities have, you know, safety equipment, right, that's intended to try to stop that from causing fires, but I do believe that's possible. The intent of this bill is not to protect when something goes wrong with the utility system, right? It's to protect the utility that's maintaining its right of way, keeping it clear, when vegetation that they don't have control over, right, enters the right way, hits the facilities, right, contacts the facilities.
Ms. O'Cleary, would you please outline what the current law is regarding the question by Representative Groh?
Good afternoon. For the record, Heather Ukurai. I am statewide right-of-way chief for Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I'm probably not your best subject matter expert for asking about the law on this, Chair Vance. I would recommend contacting Ledge Legal for that information. I don't know that DOT has a specific law with regard to liability of a utility coming into contact with vegetation on its own.
Thank you for that. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, to Representative Groh's comment. If you look in the bill, second page, section C, this section does not preclude civil liability if a utility causes vegetation to contact utility facilities. In this section, utility includes person cutting, whatever, but they're not. This is not precluding any liability for the utility companies for not maintaining their own right of way in the respect that you said. This is talking about outside vegetation coming in contact with utilities. This is not absolving them from having to keep up their equipment under their own maintenance agreements there.
Thank you. My follow-up. Representative Rauscher, through the chair, I appreciate that clarification because I do think that that's an important thing for us to have on the record for sure in terms of those distinctions. I wanted to ask about, and I just generally heard about a couple of other possibilities that may occur in other states or policy options that might help address this. One would be perhaps in conjunction with this proposed legislation and its immunity grant, having the legislature include either a vegetation management plan or sort of have the Alaska Department of Natural Resources, you know, certify on some periodic basis that the utility was doing a management of a vegetation. And then perhaps in conjunction with that or simultaneous with that, having the utility do an audit of adjacent land to look for the risks. There's been a lot of discussion at this hearing about, hey, utilities, if they know of a risk, they see a tree that, hey, is hanging over and could pose a threat, that they go and try to work on that and prevent that from occurring. But would it make sense, Representative Rasher, through the chair, for the legislature, if it adopted the statute, to include provisions provided either for a vegetation management plan and or an audit or survey of adjacent land to be conducted by the utility in question? Thank you.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, Representative Grohl. I'm a ratepayer, and I'm only going to guess tens of thousands of miles on both sides of the line going through state land, going through federal land possibly later on, or even now going through private subdivisions, going wherever. And I just can't imagine the cost of being responsible to have to do that, because I know right now that utility companies do a maintenance program on a regular basis. I've watched MEA come by my side of my house. I've got a utility line, and they're forever keeping it perfectly clean. And then I see that the four-wheelers like to utilize that, but that's my own problem. But I believe they have a rotation program that they all use, and to prescribe something specific for one utility company, which will not actually work with another utility company, I think you're asking for something that we probably couldn't even begin to fathom how to make that happen, besides the cost that you're talking about. That's my own personal view on that. My staff wants to comment here.
Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher. Through the chair, we have Carrie Ann, who's also on here, and she can speak to that.
Ms. Carrie Ann.
Thank you. Carrie Ann Baker, through the chair. I thought Representative Rauscher did a really nice job of talking about some of the challenges. We do have a vegetation management plan. It's not random. We try to touch all of our lines once every 7 years, and then we do the hazard trees by request. I would be very careful about making a utility or any other entity like this be the party that goes and monitors private property. The reality is the property owner is responsible for maintaining their private property. And what you're suggested when you think about like a monitoring program where you would have a utility monitoring private property, and I know that those suggestions have been brought up, is the cost would be really high and it would go on to all the ratepayers. So for our service territory, and I won't speak to other utilities, but I know some of them are more rural or some of them are more metropolitan, so each utility will have a different impact in a scenario like that. But our service territory is 3,166 square miles. Much of it is rural. So when there's an inspection program or where you would look outside, you're talking about flying helicopters over property continuously to maintain it. And the private property owner who owns the property, who visits it and is responsible for what is on it, should be the one that is responsible for what their property looks like and how it's maintained. Putting a third party in charge of something that large would come at a significant cost. And we suggest that if this committee goes down that road, that they allocate funds to allow that job to be done.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this legislation, the bill is written in the negative. And so I just made some notes here to make sure that it's a little difficult to understand written that way. But if I understand correctly, the tree, a tree, has to be completely inside the right-of-way for a utility to have liability for damages caused by that tree. And the tree has to be completely inside the right-of-way for the utility to have responsibility to remove the tree. The utility has no liability for a tree partially in the right-of-way, nor do they have a right to remove the tree that is partially in the right-of-way. If the trunk is outside of the right-of-way, but the tree leans into the right-of-way, there is no liability on the part of the utility to for damages or for a right to remove it. So the question that I have, it might be for Ledge Legal, does the property owner currently have legal liability for damages caused by those hazard trees that we've already defined as trees that exist outside the right-of-way but may come in contact with utility equipment or lines? And then I have a follow-up question depending on the answer to that.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Representative Rauscher.
Madam Chair, through the chair, this is Representative Rauscher, Representative Carpenter. This bill speaks to what goes on inside the right-of-way. It does not address the liability of a homeowner of private property, of state property, of federal property outside the right-of-way. It does not change any of the regards for that one bit. It doesn't change any of the liabilities one bit. It doesn't change any of the facts that are already on statute. All this talks about is what goes on inside the right-of-way, which we've given them permission, if you own a property and you have a power line, inside that right-of-way and what they are responsible for. So when something goes wrong, lawyers are the first ones to say, well, you got to go after the deepest pockets. That's where the biggest money is. So right away, they start heading over here. Well, this basically says, you know, if this started someplace else, probably looking right here and starting to charge our ratepayers extra for this lawsuit, it's probably not a good place, because there's a law that says this didn't happen because of what's inside our right away. And that's what this is about. That's all this is about. It can't speak to the outside. There probably are other laws, and if you want to speak to Ledge Legal about that, I get it. But they don't pertain to this bill. This bill pertains to the inside of the right-of-way.
Representative Carpenter.
Madam Chair, I like that answer. I would like to pose my question to Legal and get Legal's opinion on it as well.
As we are waiting for Legal to become available, Vice Chair Allard has a question.
I do. Thank you for being here, Rauscher. Through the chair. So it says on line 13, and I think you answered it, but I just want to clarify, and I think he asked it, and we're still going to wait for Legal. A utility is not liable for cutting, girdling, I have no idea what girdling is, or otherwise injuring or removing vegetation if a part of the trunk of the vegetation is inside the boundaries of the utility company's real property. That is concerning to me because it says lease, permit, easement, or right of way. So, for example, if you have a trunk that is in the right-of-way, the tree leans this way, but the trunk is uprooting, how could that trunk not be the utility company's issue or concern? Because the tree technically is in the right-of-way. Did we already clarify this? This seems like such a simple bill, and I think we're making it into something it doesn't have to be. And then I want to do one other follow-up, Madam Chair. And you don't have to answer it, Representative Rauscher. The other thing was we had discussed a little bit in regards to, let me look at my notes here, that was brought up a little bit earlier about an audit. First of all, an audit would be just fiscally unreasonable. This is a zero fiscal note right now, and I'm gathering that the prices would just crazy skyrocket in the rates. And Alaskans don't want their privacy invaded. I mean, I don't want to walk on someone's private property and then have them locked and loaded on me. And I don't know how many Alaskans. I think it's probably 65% own guns. But I just want to do as a reminder that this is codifying language. Okay. Thank you.
That's it. Representative Rauscher.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, Representative Allard. My understanding is that the trunk comes out of the ground, and it only goes not very far before it's tree and limbs. That's my understanding. So it's trunk's location is what we're talking about here. and not specifically the overhang, stalk, limbs, parts, trees, branches, all that other stuff.
May follow up, Chair. Yeah, and just quickly, I say trunk, but I will tell you, I know roots. I've seen roots destroy an entire home's foundation. I've seen limbs enter and intertwined houses, so I would be more concerned about the roots. Are the roots part of the conversation? Because the roots can be part of the easement, and then who's responsible?
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Representative Rausch, Representative Allard, I'm told that roots go out as far as the limbs or farther if they're looking for water. And I think if we have to dig the ground up to find out who actually owns this tree or not, it kind of defeating the purpose. I think we're just talking about if it's the trunk, it's the problem. And that's what this bill is concerned with. Anyway.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill sponsor seemed to say that the trunk maybe only extends up 5 feet or some amount. I'm fairly certain that the trunk is the entire vertical component of the tree from which limbs or branches issue. And
I don't know. I think look it up.
Okay. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. The way that I read this is that the vertical part of the tree, being the trunk, if it is partially in the right-of-way, the statute would err on the side of the property owner having ownership and liability for that tree. That's what I read this to be. That way the state and the state's entity, which is the utility, is not encroaching upon private property. It's giving private property rights the first call, if you will, on a tree that might be in question in encroaching a right-of-way.
I apologize, we are still waiting for legislative legal services. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. While we're waiting, I'll just go back to my original point that I'm just curious about, which is the being able to cut something down slightly outside the easement. And I understand if you're in a place like Matsu, for example, where perhaps you have to climb a fence to cut down someone's tree, I get that you shouldn't do that. But when I think about Bradley Lake, and I think about, you know, in that area, you've got these power lines going across what's probably private property, but it's in the forest. And I just think that there's probably thousands of miles that might be bordering someone's private property, where I think if you went 1 foot or a couple of feet over, I just don't think that there are going to be people there, you know, to shoot you because you cut down a tree that was in the middle of the forest, 2 feet off the easement. And I just think that we could have some sort of immunity for that. I mean, it's the forest. Thank you.
We do have Ms. Radford from Legislative Legal Services online. Thank you, Ms. Radford, for being available. We have a question from Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Radford, I will pose my question again. Very simply, do property owners currently have legal liability for damages caused by trees that exist outside of the right-of-way that may come in contact with utility poles or utility lines that would then cause damage of some sort?
For the record, this is Allison Radford from Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Carpenter. I will have to look into that. I do not know the answer at this moment, but I will look into it and get back to the committee.
Representative Carpenter, I believe Ms. Carrie Ann Baker may have that answer for you, and then Ms. Radford, I believe we do have follow-up questions for you. Ms. Baker.
Through the chair, Carrie Ann Baker. Well, I can tell you how we approach this. There was a couple of different questions, and I'll try to make sure that I hit them all. But one of them, what happens if there is a tree with the trunk that is outside the right-of-way, but the limbs are encroaching into the right-of-way? And the answer is, and I know this is not a legal answer, but we look at it like their easement is a line on the ground, but it's an imaginary line in the air as well. So we would take down all of those limbs. So anything that passes the plane of the easement, from our perspective as a utility, we're going to take down, we're going to clean up, we're going to remove. If there is vegetation that is wholly outside the right-of-way, standing propped up, and none of it goes over that plane, that imaginary line, from our perspective, unless we are invited by the property owner who owns both the land as well as the tree, we do not have the right to go and take it down. It has to be, we have to be invited, and even then, we will take it down if it is a hazard. But what we won't do is we won't do vegetation management on someone's private property, because then all of those costs get passed on to our members. So I know that's probably not a legal answer, and I'm sure and confident that Ledge Legal will come up with a much better way of wording it, but that's how our contractors will see it, and that's how we approach it, is this line on the ground that we have the right and responsibility to maintain and clear.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this piece of legislation is about civil liability, not about locations of trees. It is, the civil liability would be caused by the location of the tree, but the thing that we're creating here is structure for who's going to be liable. So I want to know if a property owner currently has liability for a tree for damages, if a tree that is on their property falls over. It is not currently in any way, either the trunk or the limbs in the right of way, but it falls over because it's dead or for whatever reason, and it contacts the electrical lines and causes a fire or some other damage. Is the property owner liable for those damages because they didn't take care of their tree in the first place? That's the question that I have.
Either Ms. Radford or Ms. Claire from DOT, do either of you have an answer for Representative Carpenter?
For the record, this is Allison Radford from Legislative Services, through the Chair, Representative Carpenter. As I stated, I will have to look into that and get back to the committee.
Madam Chair, since you're looking that up, my follow-on question would be, would this legislation provide a pathway for a property owner to be held liable for damages caused by hazard trees, because we're defining the liability for trees inside the right-of-way, but it's not saying anything about the trees that are outside the right-of-way? So that's the follow-on, and obviously it depended on your answer.
Representative Sumner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm not sure that we're defining I see nowhere in here that we're defining liability for trees inside the right-of-way. This is simply saying that they're not liable for trees outside of the right-of-way, right? So they are still I keep hearing we're only talking about trees inside the right-of-way. We're only talking about trees outside the right-of-way. And I don't think we're changing whatever liability conditions exist, either for trees inside the right-of-way or the property owner's liability situation for trees outside the right-of-way. We're simply saying that the utility is not liable for trees that exist outside of the right-of-way. Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
Line 13 is strictly saying that if a utility goes and cuts a tree down that has its trunk, and to me that means the tree could be leaning and some component of the trunk could be over into the right-of-way or into the easement, is simply saying that they are not liable to the property owner for cutting down that tree, okay? And that is quite clearly what that says. That's the plain meaning of that language. It has nothing to do with the liability condition for subsequent damages from the tree contact. So that is a separate issue.
Representative Crow.
My comments would have been very similar to those of Representative Sumner.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize for being late. Maybe that's been covered. We seem to be using right-of-way and easement as interchangeable. And I would like to get a clearly defined definition of an easement versus a right-of-way, because I believe there is a substantial difference.
Ms. Claray, can you give us a definition of easement versus right-of-way?
Chair Vance, through the chair, this is Heather Upgarai for DOT. I think that I would defer to law on that because the definition depends on the context, but I can give you a statement that might help clarify from a DOT standpoint, and that would be that DOT holds and manages various rights of way, some for highways, and within those rights of way, we permit uses such as utility permits that may be, they may hold an easement or they may have a permit from DOT, just kind of depends. So that can vary based on the context. I would defer to legal for further information on that.
Thank you, Ms. Claray. Ms. Radford, do you have some legal definitions of easement versus right-of-way in the context of these utilities?
For the record, Allison Radford, legislative legal. Through the chair, to the chair, the bill is silent on that. I would have to. Generally, courts use plain language.
Representative Johnson.
I don't know if it's a follow-up or a question, but I'll use my home for an example. I have a utility easement that runs between my house and my neighbor's house. There's no road. There's just an easement. Now, I understand right-of-way is easement can exist within a right-of-way, but this is an easement that exists outside of DOT, outside of anyone except probably the people that platted the land originally. So I would like a clear definition of this has nothing to do with DOT in my mind. So that clarification, if we could get it.
Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher, Chair Vance, could we direct this to Andy Lehman? I believe he could clarify some of these questions.
Mr. Lehman, did you hear the question?
Madam Chair, yes, I did. I would be happy to help answer it.
If you could state your name and your title and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. Through the chair, Andy Lehman, General Counsel for the Alaska Power Association. I've looked at a ton of legal documents over the years that give utilities the right to have their electric lines on a piece of property and to operate and maintain them. I actually did have somebody ask me a question once upon a time, what's the difference between a right-of-way and an easement? I think the practical answer right now is that there really isn't much difference and that the terms are used interchangeably. If you followed the history of the law back far enough, I think you would see that a right-of-way historically was associated with the right to cross over, right? A right-of-way, right? A right to cross over a piece of property by foot or by road. And an easement was a right to do something, you know, on land that didn't belong to you that could involve all kinds of other things, right? It could be to, you know, have a building encroach on it. It could be something other than the right to cross it. But when I see documents these days that give utilities the right to have facilities somewhere, it really is six of one, half a dozen of the other. Sometimes people call them easements. Sometimes they call them rights of way, but they all do the same basic function, which is allow a utility to maintain lines on property that it is not the doesn't own title to. And then the documents, you know, set out the conditions, you know, how big they are, what they can do, their access rights, all the things you would expect.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm going to go back to my own property. So I have 15 feet to one side of the easement. My neighbor has 15 foot to the other side of the easement. But we own that land. Is that correct?
Mr. Lehman?
Whomever.
Through the chair, Lehman, General Counsel for the Power Association. So, yeah, when a utility has an easement, it's a partial right. Right. It's a right to use the property for a particular purpose, like having a power line run across it. And it should include the right to come and operate, maintain, right, do work on the line. It includes the right to clear vegetation, right? That shows up in the easements as well. You're correct that the remaining everything associated with the property that's not inconsistent with the utilities easement still belongs to the landowner, right? So the landowner can go on that property. People who are not the utility don't, you know, have the right to use it just because there's an electric utility easement there. So yes, you still own the property, but the utilities easement is going to limit what the property owner can do, within that easement.
Follow up.
And the difference between that and a right of way, are they interchangeable? Because the right of way, I don't think the property is owned by the individual. The right of way, the property is owned by the state through eminent domain or the utility. So I see a very clear delineation between a right of way and an easement.
Representative Rauscher.
Madam Speaker, Representative Rauscher, two representatives Johnson. I worked for the Massey Borough one time in right of ways.
Representative Rauscher, if you could.
I'm sorry. I worked for the Massey Borough one time in the right of way division. And right of ways have specific rights. Easements have specific rights. Each one has a contract. Each one has an ability to stop you from building on it, but able to use it. Each one has a right to dictate whatever you both agree to. And usually when you're talking about the Massey Borough and a street right away, or there's usually a utility right away, there's the regular DOT right away, there's all kinds of right aways, and there are easements. They all just depend on how you write it up. They are somewhat interchangeable, but departments use different languages for the same things, what I have noticed while I was working at the Massey Borough.
And this is more of a statement. So of that 30 feet, my neighbor and I do not have control over that property in total. So I guess why am I paying taxes for it? So, I'm still not clear on the delineation, and I see several things where it's used interchangeably, and I do think this affects easements and right-of-ways the same, and I need to learn more about this.
Representative Gray, and then Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm able to articulate this now. So you buy the Alaska dream. You buy a house with acreage behind it, a forest. We have 100 inches of snowfall, and we have tall trees that are clearly not in the right-of-way, but they bow because of 100 inches of snow, which happens, we know. And a fire is started because the tree, is, which is clearly out of it, bows into the power line, and a fire is started, and say some structures burn. I've purchased the Alaska dream, but that's why Representative Carpenter's question is so important. Because then I'm going to be sued and I'm going to be held liable for structures that burned somewhere else because I bought a house that had acreage behind it, that had a utility going through it, but it's my responsibility to be out there, you know, I don't know, like cutting down all the trees or whatever. I want to make sure homeowners are being informed that they're going to be held liable for if a whole city burns down, that it's their fault and they're going to pay for it. Like, that's my fear. Thank you.
Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Rauscher, through the chair, to Representative Gray, I originally stated this does not give anybody more liability. This does not impose liability. This does not make anybody at fault. This bill does not make anybody not responsible for anything other than what's going on that originates inside the right-of-way. That's all this bill does. It won't change a thing on whether you're responsible for what happened when the snow came and fell on your branches, bent your tree over, maybe it hit a school bus. I don't know, but that's not going to be the school bus's fault that your tree landed on it. And so the right-of-way is the same way. If your branches are falling over, we're not saying you're at fault. We're not saying you're liable. We're not saying that you're in trouble. We're just saying whatever happened there did not originate in the right-of-way. So the utility companies cannot really be responsible for that item themselves. That's all it says.
Follow up.
Through the chair, in my experience, if I were this person who bought this home with all this acreage with the utility going through it, I believe the utility company is more of an expert on which vegetation might impose a hazard to the utility than me as a random homeowner. I believe the utility might be the expert on what vegetation needs to be removed and what vegetation might potentially cause a hazard.
Through the chair, Madam Speaker, there's no argument there, and they do that. MEA does that. They've gone to your speaker. To the Speaker of the House, they've gone to her property, and they have said, you know, you got a couple of leaners over here. You want us to take them down. And your speaker, because she said this on record why I can say that. And she said, yes, please, take them down. We don't have the ability. So it already happens. They've done it on my property, and I've seen them do it on other properties. I believe what you're asking for already happens. And I don't know if it could happen quick enough for you at this point, but I tell you, it does happen.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. I want to pose a question to Carrie Ann, specifically about the first section of this bill and the subsection B of the statute that we're amending. This is a utility is not liable for cutting and the following language. Do we take that to mean that the utility is prevented from removing a tree that is partially in the right-of-way, and thus meaning trees that are partially within the right-of-way are no longer the responsibility of the utility?
Well, Representative Vance, through the chair.
Please state your name for the record again, Ms. Baker.
Yes, Carrie Ann Baker with Homer Electric Association. I don't have the particular bill in front of you, but I can tell you operationally how we handle it. If it's straddling the line, we will usually end up taking them. Because you live in an area of our service area, I think you have a really good understanding of how upsetting that has been to some of our members. But our reading of our right to use an easement or a right of way to clear our lines is that we have permission to act within the scope of that line. So if something crosses the plane of this imaginary line, then we are going to deal with that. If somebody reports a hazard outside of the line, let me give you a real example of how this might play operationally and then how it might cross into the legal part of it. You have a tree that, let's say, it is 20 feet outside of the right-of-way, so 20 feet outside the line, but very tall. In a scenario like that, there's no question. We do not have the ability to go outside our limited permission, right, because the property owner owns everything underneath it. They own the land. We simply have a permission to go on and perform a certain task within a certain geographic area. So anything that crosses the plane, we can do. Anything outside, we need permission. This happens with the spruce bark beetle, and if you're talking about hills, you're talking about things that could be football fields away that are blowing into the line, and that's really what this scenario is. Do we have an expert opinion on vegetation within the right-of-way? We do, and we do maintain a vigorous clearing program, and we do it on purpose because we want to provide reliable power. Are we an expert on private property outside of that specific geographic area that we have a permission? Absolutely not. We don't know what's happening there. That's the private property owner who has the best opportunity to know what's on their property. I hope that was clear.
Follow up?
Through the chair, thank you, Carrie Ann. That is clear. Another way to read this would be a utility is able to cut, curd, or otherwise injure or remove vegetation if a part of the trunk of vegetation is inside the boundaries of the utility's easement or right-of-way.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I may be a little off on the facts here, but I believe this stems from a California utility that the lines fell and burned and it started a fire. And the California courts ruled that the utility was responsible. And they basically filed for bankruptcy. And so I think if I go deep enough, I see this is indemnifying the utility. And in the case of California, I think it was inside their line started the fire and everything else. But still, so I think what my gut tells me is this is a way to indemnify utilities in Alaska against any kind of catastrophic. And there was malfeasance, I think, proven in the case. And I'm not wanting to accuse our utilities of anything like that. But I think it stems from an attempt to indemnify utilities from those types of accidents or malfeasance or whatever. So I'm not sure I'm prepared to let anybody off the hook.
Ryan McKee, staff to Representative Rauscher, through the chair. Representative Johnson, no, this did not stem from that, because in this legislation, it does state that if they did not follow do the due diligence, or if they were at fault, this does not it doesn't get them off the hook, or it does hold them liable. If they were the reason, like you said, if their line fell out of their area and hit another part of the vegetation and they started the fire, then they absolutely would be held liable for that. This legislation, just to clarify, is showing that if something out of their control outside of their property damages their utilities and whatnot, that they're not held liable for that because it was outside of their property. They weren't, as they've said here a few times, they can't go on to private property if they're not invited. And so as such, they shouldn't be held liable if something happens there that they try to, either going to a property owner and saying, there's this hazard tree, we can offer to remove it for you. If though the property owner refuses, then that's basically the extent of what they can do. They've notified them of a dangerous tree or something. They've offered to go ahead and take care of that for them. But if the property owner refuses to do that, then there's not much else they can do, sort of illegally going on and taking down that tree, in which case that'd be a whole different issue that they would face.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think in California, the line fell onto the property that was in the right-of-way. The ensuing fire burned thousands of acres, and the courts held that they were responsible regardless of their cleaning. So, it's a sticky wicket. That's all I can say. So I just want to underline causes, and I'm a skeptic. I try to find out what's wrong with it and then fix it, as opposed to find out what's good about it. And then, so that's kind of my way I solve problems. And I just see that I just have some additional questions. So I guess I'll leave it at that. And I will do a little more research on what happened in California with their Supreme Court and the bankruptcy of that utility, et cetera, and see if any of this gels.
Vice Chair Allard.
Thank you. And I appreciate that you brought that up, Rep. Johnson. I think I had brought up Hawaii before you came in. So that is actually the utility company's fault. Okay. So on this, then my question would be, because I too wonder, why is this all of a sudden coming forward unless there's some underlying message that I'm missing here? But if a utility if I have my home and I have beautiful trees and I've been there a while and the utility company uses that easement to put up some power line or something, my tree falls, who's going to be responsible since my tree was there before the utility pole and the power lines? Can you answer that for me?
Representative Allard, do you maybe Mr. Lehman from Alaska Power Association, do you have an answer for Representative Allard?
Through the chair, this is Sandy Lehman. I'm happy to take a stab at that. So the question from was whether, you know, if you have an easement, right, and the tree was there before the easement, you know, does that make any difference in the analysis? And I don't believe that it does, because you know, once the easement's in place, right, and the line is there, the utility has the right to have their line there, but they only have the right out to the, you know, the edge of the easement, right? They don't have any rights beyond that, whether you're talking about a tree that was there before the line or after. I would venture to say that almost all Alaska utility lines came in after the trees, right? There were trees well before power lines. So I think that's pretty common.
Follow up?
Yeah, thank you. And it could go to Representative Rauscher if you'd like, but I think the utility company could answer this following question. The reason you're bringing this bill forward is because you want to prevent lawsuits in the future and put it back on the homeowners? Question mark.
Representative Rauscher.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, to Representative Allen, I appreciate the question. I appreciate everybody's question here. Beetle kill trees is when this started, okay? This is not the first year I've carried this bill, okay? And beetle kill trees did not start this year, okay? They started 2 years ago. So I just want to say that's one of the main reasons for starting this, and a lot of things have happened since then. Hawaii, I mean, a lot of different things have happened across. We're trying to understand in millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of court costs, okay? And this bill is not trying to kill what everybody believes is automatically absolved on their private land from causing any damage. That's what I'm getting there. You're automatically absolved. And now this bill is taking that away. This is not doing that to you. You still have the same responsibilities that you had before this bill or after this bill is passed. You will still have the same liabilities, whether those trees are full of snow, dangling on a power line, and it probably says that now they can come with their truck and cut those branches away. I'm sorry, but you'll lose your branches. They're hanging on our power lines. Whether they are causing a fire at this time or not, they're having a problem. They have a power outage. Transformers, the switch is blowing on them, and they've got to find out what's waving, what's making our lines wave. I'm going to assume you're going to lose those branches. I can't talk for a power company, but I've seen them do it in my town, and so I'm just going to say that's exactly what they will do, just to answer the previous question. Second question is that from Representative Allard. It's beetle kill trees is why I'm doing this, because we have to delineate the utility's responsibility, because when they go to court, it costs me. It's going to cost me as a ratepayer, because millions and millions of dollars of the lawsuits cost money. And all we're saying is, if they're keeping their equipment up to date, if they're making sure that their right-of-ways are clear, and they haven't caused any problem within the right-of-way to start this, please, just don't go here. It's just not worth it. This bill is going to say they did their job.
Can I do a quick follow-up? Okay, so Representative Johnson used his house as an example. So I have an easement, and I have a fire hydrant. Thank you. I have it right next to my house. My insurance is a little bit lower. But in the easement, they come out every once in a while and clear it, but honestly, I'm the one that clears it. And my concern is that if something catches fire, they want to try to push the blame on the homeowner. I'm a little worried about the bill. I am, because my concern is, I understand they're using it as codifying language, but at the same, I don't read it the same way you're describing it or they do. And I don't know if there has to be a different play on the words. I don't know. I just feel like I'm a little worried about the homeowners. That's all. Okay, that's it.
Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm glad that we're having this conversation. I have to admit that in my reading of the statute, my understanding of the word liable has shifted. I read this to be liable as in responsible, and it's not. So I would like to make a question, and I'm not sure who it goes to. the legislation that's before us is just clarifying that utilities cannot be sued for damages caused by trees outside of the right-of-way, and the utility cannot be sued for removing a tree that is partially or completely inside the right-of-way. That's what I want to clarify.
Ms. Radford, could you clarify for Representative Carpenter the language as proposed in this piece of legislation?
For the record, Allison Radford, Legislative Legal Services, through the chair to Representative Carpenter, that is correct.
Ms. Radford, while we have you, does this bill remove any criminal liability from the utility or negligence?
For the record, Allison Radford to the chair, it does not address that question.
Thank you. We have a few minutes left. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So looking back at some of the materials that were distributed for HB 29 in the previous legislature, there was discussion about the McKinley fire and about how the tree that fell and caused it was definitely not on the property of the utility, but that a collection of insurance companies sued the utility for millions of dollars. That's my understanding of what brought this legislation forward, is that because the electric company said that if they had to deal with these types of lawsuits, it would bankrupt them. And if they said if the legislation didn't pass, they would have to start doing the California style of rolling brownouts or blackouts during times of high fire danger. It's dry, it's windy, we have beetle bark, we have things blowing towards the power lines. So they're like, you know what, you're not going to protect us from being sued, then we'll just shut the power off. I don't know if that's changed, but I mean, I feel like that is important context, and it does make me worried again about I just think that there's got to be an act of God type clause. Like if there's really high wind and a branch blows from a football field away into the power line, no one's responsible for that. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's possible to include, because I am, like some other members of the committee, worried about if someone's going to be held financially responsible. I think the private homeowner seems just, I can't imagine. Thanks.
Mr. Lehman, I have a question to piggyback kind of off of the thought process here. Are the utility companies, who owns the utility companies in Alaska?
Through the chair, Andy Lehman, general counsel for the Alaska Power Association. Most Alaskans receive their electric utility service through member-owned cooperatives, and that means that there are no shareholders, right, or private equity owners. The owners are the current and former members, right, of the co-op, and they're governed by boards of directors that are elected by the members. There are also some electric utilities in Alaska that are municipally owned. Those two groups account for almost all the electric utilities in Alaska. There are a handful of investor-owned utilities as well.
Thank you for that. I asked that question because of Representative Gray's concern that big companies may not be – are trying to shirk responsibility. However, my Homer Electric is on the peninsula that is member-owned. That is – it would then fall on us as the ratepayers, as Representative Rauscher. So legally, we may have a different landscape that I think we need to consider, as with Representative Johnson's questions. But we have had a great dialogue in this, and we'll continue this conversation. I want to thank Representative Rauscher and his staff and all of the invited testifiers and Ms. Radford for being available. Representative Johnson.
A request of the chairman, if I could. Could we get someone from the Division of Insurance or some expertise on insurance to see if this will have any effect on homeowners insurance, if we're going to have to pay more? And just to clarify that, because, you know, we can, we're real good at passing things, unfunded mandates. And if your, you know, your homeowner's insurance goes up, that's something we ought to at least take into consideration.
Yes, Representative Johnson. And I was going to see if someone from DNR could be available to talk about easements, because that conversation has come up quite a bit as well. But we are now going to set House Bill 227 aside. That concludes our business for today. House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Friday, March 8th at 1 p.m. to hear SSCR 12 disapprove EO 135 and bring back House Bill 227 Electric Utility Liability for a further discussion and public testimony, and to consider appointees to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect it is 2:55 p.m.